Hello, New Hampshire, and hello, Bedford. Welcome to Business IQ Radio here on 105.1 WBNH. I'm Don Byrne, one of your hosts, and I'm here today with my friend and colleague from the Small Business Development Center, located over at the University of Manchester, Andrea O'Brien. Hello, Andrea.
Hey, Don. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing very, very well, although it's morning for some people.
That's right.
As you're listening to this.
Yes, that's right.
Because of the magic of radio, we're able to bridge time and space. And we have an area that we're going to talk about today that I think is of growing interest to people in this area and is actually an area of deep expertise for you, sustainability,
yes.
Right?
Yep. You know what? It has to start becoming an area of interest for us all. I watch the news, and I certainly watch the weather, and we have had some crazy weather these past few years. And some would say there's climate change. Some would say there isn't climate change. But one thing is for sure, we have to be good stewards of this planet and our community. And so the show we have today is going to talk about one industry sector, the grocery store sector, and what it can do to become a better steward, a better community member, but more importantly, a more profitable business by paying attention to the principles of sustainability. And so we're going to be talking to, I'm going to introduce the speaker, okay, Don, Peter Cook. He is the program developer of the Grocery Stewardship Certification Program. He works for an organization called ManaMet, and they're a nonprofit based out of Massachusetts, but also have offices in Maine, and they work all over the country. He has been to 900 grocery stores all over this country promoting sustainable management standards. You know, internal business management standards founded on sustainable business practices.
And you introduced me to a little bit of this program maybe a year or 18 months ago. And I was impressed by their ability to take what generally are feel-good statements and quantify the business benefit. And, you know, I don't know a lot about the grocery business, but I know that it's a tight margin business. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really a lot of the appeal because to overcome momentum, you know, we've always done it this way. So let's just keep always doing it this way.
Right.
Big issue, right?
Right, right. You got to change your mindset. And, you know, grocery stores are such an important part of the community. Like who doesn't want to live in a neighborhood or a town that doesn't have a great grocery store? Because we go there a lot.
Right, right. And this is a program that the SBDC has an interface into, right? You folks have some supportive relationship with ManaMet in terms of, you know, identifying. I'm sure that when people come in and they're talking about grocery businesses and things like this, this is probably one of the referrals you get them to take a look at. Right,
right. Right. This is I actually have assisted them on helping businesses assess their management standards and work directly with the business to help them move towards a better, you know, more sustainable management standards and improve their bottom line. And actually, we have a success story coming out in the next few weeks that tells a great story of a little grocery store up in Laconia.
Now, when you say that you have a success story coming out where?
Oh, well, we usually post on our website.
Okay.
On our website.
And if people wanted to find your website, how would they do that?
www.nhsbdc.org.
Right. And if they had questions for you, because I know Peter is always on the road, and if people locally here in Bedford or in the greater Manchester area wanted mm-hmm. to reach out, they could reach you. Can you tell them how the best way to reach you?
Sure. Phone number is pretty easy. So my office phone number is 641-4379, and that's at the University of New Hampshire in Manchester.
And it's normal business hours 5 days a week, right?
Yes. Yep. And we look forward to their call.
Well, on that note, I think why don't we just ask you to invite Peter, who's going to be on the phone, joining us by phone today, to come on in and let's get this going.
Peter, thank you so much for taking the time today to talk to us about the things you're involved in with ManaMet and the Grocery Stewardship Certification Program. But before we launch into that and that industry discussion, we'd like to get a little background on our guests, find out where you came from and how you got to be on the show today, how you got to be the program manager, program developer for ManaMet. So can you tell us a little bit about your background?
And then who ManaMet is.
Sure. Okay, thanks for having me. Yes, I have been with ManaMet since 2012. And ManaMet is a sustainability nonprofit based out of ManaMet, Massachusetts.
Where is that exactly? I'm not that familiar with the town. Where in Massachusetts is that?
ManaMet is the next town south of Plymouth.
Oh, okay,
so
fine.
The South Shore.
And you know,
oh, lovely.
Yeah. I have to say that I think they're really into birds. Can you, right? Didn't they get their start? Because they were
it used to be the ManaMet Bird Observatory, and then it was the ManaMet Center for Conservation Sciences, and now it's just ManaMet Incorporated, nonprofit. And beyond the birds, we also do a lot of other work in different areas. But yes, we have offices and sites throughout the entire Western Hemisphere. We're not just in America, but we have people working in South America, and we do work up in the Arctic. But our work is essentially organized into four major life-supporting systems, which have to do with either the natural environment, forests, the food systems, and our economic systems. So all these programs are managed by different program leaders and our staff. And so ManaMet has been around for almost 50 years. We do work all over the world, and the grocery work is, for the most part, just here in the U.S. However, we do have one store in Canada that's participating, but we're about 900 stores across the country now, from Maine all the way down to Florida, over to Texas, and a whole bunch of stores just recently completed in California.
Well, you know, nobody knows about the program that you're referring to, and so we're going to delve into that for a second, in a second. Before we go there, where did you come from before you were at ManaMet? Weren't you leading another program? Was it a state agency?
Yeah, before ManaMet, I was the pollution prevention program manager for the state of Maine, out of the state agency, the Department of Environmental Protection. I did that for 11 years, and I worked with dozens and dozens of different businesses from different industry sectors, from ski areas to medical labs to fiberglassers to boat builders to metal platers and wood products.
Heavy industry.
A lot of industry, and then I sort of started working with restaurants and hotels, the more ubiquitous types of businesses that people tend to go to a lot. You know, a lot of people don't really go to the metal plater that often, but they go to hotels and restaurants a lot. And then I realized, boy, we even more than that, we go to the grocery store more than we go to hotels and restaurants.
All the time.
So I started thinking more and more about the impact that grocery stores have and the opportunities that they have to reduce impact, but also save money as well.
Okay, so here you are working for a state agency. The term pollution prevention, that's relatively new in the regulatory world, isn't it? What is that really? It's not even though you work for a regulator, it's really more of a assistance type, or?
Yes, every state has an agency that has to do with managing the natural resources or the environmental sort of aspects of the state. And it's called something different in each state. I think in New Hampshire, it's the DES, Department of Environmental Services. But while I do have a lot of regulatory programs, all these agencies throughout the country in each state also have non-regulatory programs and technical assistance programs and programs that businesses can take advantage of and use the resources to help manage their environmental aspects, because when businesses are on top of really managing the resources that flow through the business, they've been realizing that there's actually a really good benefit to the bottom line as well. There's a lot of cost savings associated with managing for the environment in the right way.
That's a concept that I think they refer to that as triple bottom line. Is that a buzzword that is used?
Yeah, the triple bottom line involves the communities and the people and the employees. It's the people and the planet, which is the environment and the natural resources, and it's the profit. You know, what's happening with the money, and is this in our best interest? Is it cost benefit? Is there a cost benefit for us to consider managing for reducing environmental impact? And a lot of case studies out there show that it's very much so. There's a cost benefit in being very adept at managing for the environment. And so there are a lot of businesses that externalize costs and ignore it and ensure that their single bottom line, can increase, but in terms of profits. But there's a lot of businesses out there in New Hampshire and in other states here in New England and all around the country that are really systemizing how they manage for their energy use, their water use, the waste they produce, and the chemicals that they use. And if they do it in a more systematic fashion, that they experience, while they experience a gain in profits, they also experience a gain in terms of the people part and the planet part of that bottom line as well. So that's the triple bottom line. And there are state agencies out there that have technical assistance providers that can help businesses, because the average business size in America is less than 10 people. In New England and in Maine and New Hampshire, I think the average business size is somewhere around like 5 people. So that's, there's a lot of businesses in the country and in all the states, obviously. But, to have an environmental expert just happen to be like one of those 5 people in your average business,
not
pretty rare. So there's a lot of different resources out there that people can take advantage of to help their business be better stewards and to experience the cost benefit of managing for the environment if they get in touch with either the state agencies or the small business development centers or whatever business resources the states have. Lots of resources out there that don't ever get used, which is a shame, but they're out there.
Well, Peter, it's interesting. You've made a couple of interesting comments I want to follow up a little bit on. First, sustainability is still considered a relatively new science, I think. And the fact that you're able to, and your colleagues are able to put the benefits of it into financial terms, I think really speaks to the rapid maturity of that science and that industry, because, that's really what it comes down to. You have to be able to demonstrate the value proposition to the owners of the business. So I'm encouraged to hear that. And your comment about really focusing, resources on smaller businesses. And it's one of the things Andrea and I have spoken about in the past, which is the SBA defines small businesses, and there's a couple of variations of it, but roughly 500 or fewer people.
Or 5 million in revenue.
Yeah. Outside the United States, 500 people in a company is huge. So, I think your comment about, the average American business really is about 10 people, and in perhaps in the northern New England area here, 5 or less. That's actually more typical, I think, of what you'd find in other countries, especially in some of the less developed countries. So it's terrific. Now, I'm guessing that your programs, you try to extend these to the international arena where you guys are active, right?
Well, yes. There's a lot of resources out there, not just in this country, but internationally as well. And, that's why, you say that sustainability is a new science. And,
at least
being
the term
able to sustain
is. Yeah.
Ourselves, basically, right down to the start of our existence is something we've always thought of. But in terms of thinking of it as a science, yeah, you're right. Quantifying the value of sustainability is relatively new, and there are many, many, many businesses out there that engage in sustainable business practices because it's the right thing to do. And that's something that they have been saying for decades. It's sort of anecdotal. It's just the right thing to do. But what is the quantifiable benefit to it? And so that's what we're trying to do at ManaMet with the Grocery Stewardship Certification Program.
You've done a great job.
And what our technical assistance providers do is they try to quantify what the benefit is from an economic level to make it, worthwhile for people to engage in these types of business practices.
I'd like to say right now that if anybody is listening that has a favorite grocery store or knows somebody that owns a grocery store, this is a program that they really must pay attention to because what the program Peter's developed really pulls into the analysis the metrics of measuring your management of goods, services, the whole thing, energy, and he's come up with a great presentation. A great way of communicating that to, in this case, the grocery store sector all over the country. And so, it's an amazing, he's got an amazing fact, one that I'd like to repeat, and I'll let you repeat it, Peter. With respect to grocery stores, can you tell us about what it costs? What is it? How much revenue you have to generate to save a dollar of profit?
Yeah, sure. So, everybody's intimately familiar with the grocery store, and this is one reason why I developed this program is because it's not like some sort of industry that nobody has ever heard of or goes to, but we all go to the grocery store. We go there on an average of twice a week. As Americans, that's the average. We go there two times per week, and we see the same things all the time. In fact, if I told you I was going to put you in a time machine, and instead of putting you in a real time machine and traveled, if I just took you to like a grocery store and blindfolded you and took the blindfold off and I said, what year is it? You'd look around and be like, I can't tell. The grocery stores have looked the same decade after decade since 1960. They all look the same and they operate the same. And there are huge opportunities for them to save money. But the thing that a lot of people don't know is, A, they don't know they go to the grocery store twice a week. They know they go there a lot, but they don't know it's twice a week. Second thing they don't really know is that grocery stores hardly make any money. The profit margins are very slim. They get by selling a lot of product. So your typical average American grocery store needs to sell about $17 million worth of product, come out with a $300,000 profit at the end of the year. That's it. You got to sell $17 million worth of stuff to have $300,000 left over as profit. That's a 1.7% profit margin. It's very thin. So it's, they can't afford to be wasteful. And they can't afford, to try new stuff, because if it doesn't work out, then there goes their profits right there. So it's a very risk-averse sort of industry, because as long as they just keep doing things the way they've always been doing them, then, they're pretty much ensured that they're going to get that little bit of profit at the end of the year. And so they can't really be too innovative. So we've developed a program that can help them save money without really trying to make it feel too risky for them. We try to meet any of the business programs that we do at ManaMed, besides the grocery program. We meet them where they're at right now. We don't hold a high bar up and say, you need to come way up here before we'll start working with you. We want to meet them right where they are, and we know where the grocery industry is, and we've been pretty successful working with about 15 different chains all around the country. But we meet them where they're at, and we realize that it's a tight margin industry, and that they really have to systemize how they manage for some of the things that they've been managing for in order to gain that quantifiable value that we were talking about. So with regard to electrical energy, the kilowatt hours that flow through that grocery store, anytime a grocery store can save $1 of energy, it's worth $18 in sales of product.
Really?
So they have to sell $18 worth of stuff to cover $1 of inefficiency.
Yeah. I mean, any overhead dollar they spend, that would apply to any overhead dollar, right? Not just energy.
Well, no, this is for electrical. The 18 to 1 coefficient is for strictly for electrical, and that's pretty applicable because grocery stores use more electrical energy than any other building type per square foot in the country. So, they have a huge, massive electric bill every month because of all the refrigeration and all the lighting. So that is a big controllable expense.
And they
obviously,
used a lot of
their
it.
Rent, and they have their employees they have right. to pay, and there's productivity right. issues. But being able to control your electricity use is actually pretty easy.
What's the average? What is the grocery store use on average for electricity? Like a medium size mom and pop, not mom and pop, but a medium size store, not a big Hannaford's or Shaw's.
Like Harvest here.
Oh, it's probably
in
about in between $20,000 and
$30,000
a month. Wow. But the thing is, like most grocery chains, they don't just have one store. They have like 200. So they're doing that 200 times.
Wow.
Sure.
It gets tough to manage. So that's why they need a systematic approach to really, because once if you have a wasteful practice at one store, you can just multiply that by 200 because its chances are if you're not managing for this in a systematic manner, it's happening at 200 stores. And anytime you can save a little bit of money at one store, it doesn't sound like a lot, but when you multiply it out by 200, all of a sudden it becomes $250,000 project.
So it's interesting. It sounds like the smaller organizations are really caught between a rock and a hard place because it sounds as if they are great candidates for automation, but they can't afford to roll out automation. So even though there are efficiencies to be had, you know, anything you can do to either make your current labor force more productive or reduce the amount of labor that you have is going to have a big return. But the upfront CapEx to do that sounds like it's beyond the reach of many of them to be able to make that investment.
Well, I don't, you know, I don't think so. I mean, when you think about productivity from an employee level, there's all sorts of ways that you can get more out of the employees, and that's resource management right there. I mean, it's not energy, it's not waste, it's not water, but the employees that are at your store or at your business, wherever you are, the social science behind all this shows that more and more people are wanting to feel like their contribution to the company that they work for is of value. And you can drive productivity up with effective employee engagement. In fact, in companies that have more engaged employees than companies that have less engaged employees are more profitable. They're 16% more profitable, and engaged employees are 18% more productive. And that's according to a Gallup poll from 2012. But there's so many companies and businesses out there, and grocery stores in particular, that think it's very hard to drive that productivity up, or they think it's very hard to engage employees. And it's not, actually. It's not a huge challenge. In fact, it can be very easy. And what a lot of the science and the social science behind it has shown is that many employees across all sorts of industry sectors have higher job satisfaction levels and engagement levels anytime that they can contribute to either the environmental or social aspects of their own job. But many places don't provide them the opportunity to do that. And they get so much benefit when they allow an opportunity for them to engage in either the environmental or social aspects of whatever that company does. And in grocery stores, there's a huge opportunity because there's so many instances in which an employee can help that company be more efficient or be less wasteful, because the flow of energy and materials through your average grocery store is massive. It is absolutely immense. There are opportunities every 10 feet to help that business be more efficient with its energy use or less wasteful with regard to the materials, whether it's cardboard or packaging or plastic or food that's wasted. There are so many instances that a grocery store can have a benefit if they engage their employees. Yeah.
Can you give us an example? Well, first of all, I just want to comment that if you have an engaged employee and a happy employee, you aren't going to lose that employee, and you won't have to retrain the new hire from having lost the employee. So that makes you more efficient just by keeping a steady workforce. But can you give me an example as to how, under your program, one might engage their employee? Or is that?
My program is basically an employee engagement program. So enrolling them in the grocery stewardship certification. So if a chain enrolled their stores in the grocery stewardship
program,
we help provide that engagement. And there's many different ways that you can engage people, but one of the more basic ways is just to provide them with contextual awareness of what how their job interacts with the environment, for instance, like how what their job in their job, how they can help that company save money by either like closing the walk-in freezer door instead of leaving it open when you're on your way back out to the floor. So many grocery companies have employees that leave that one of the many walk-in freezer doors wide open. I've been to about 400 grocery stores in the last 3 years all around the country.
That's unbelievable. 400.
It's a 50% ratio
twice a week
that a walk-in freezer door has been left open.
It's a
but
what?
The company's...
The freezer door's been left open, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, or the seal around the door might be compromised. It might have a little bit of a tear in the rubber gasket, and you'll see frost build up and because the warm, humid air is sort of being collected in there, and then it's condensing and freezing. It's a good indicator that there's a leak. But that's there for months because nobody has been engaged enough to even tell a refrigeration tech about it. It's not that right. they're going to fix it themselves. I mean, it's, in most cases, it's a $4 fix.
Yeah.
But that thing will leak $3 to $5 a day. And when you have a leak $3 to $5 a day, that comes out to almost, I don't know, something like $2,000 per year. But when you apply that $18 coefficient, you have to sell $36,000 worth of stuff just to cover one leak on a walk-in freezer door.
That's outrageous.
Sure. By the way, you're listening to...
It is outrageous.
You're listening to 105...
A lot of times they leave the doors open.
Yep. So you're listening to 105.1 WBNH. This is Business IQ Radio. Don Byrne and Andrea O'Brien. And our guest today is Peter Cook. Peter is with Manomet, a nonprofit, a worldwide nonprofit, doing tremendous work in the area of sustainability. And we're talking to Peter about one of the programs that he has developed and oversees, which is the Grocery Stewardship Certification Program, and some of the really staggering numbers associated with, you know, you talk about small things making a huge difference when you have a leverage of, you know, $18 to one for a kilowatt hour saved. You can really see how small things make a big difference. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Peter, on your comment there. We needed to do a station ID there. So.
Oh, sure. Yep. Well, that's important. So it's more contextual awareness there. You got to know which station you're listening to.
I'd like to just, you know, we all go to the grocery store twice a week. Everybody who listens goes to the grocery store. And as you walk around, this is what I do in the grocery store. As I walk around, by the way, Peter, you've ruined the, not ruined, but you've made me aware of what actually, you know, the waste that goes on in a grocery store. But there are these things called air curtains, which I was never aware of. And Peter, I'll let you talk about air curtains. That's just such a simple thing. When you go to the grocery store again, you really owe it to yourself to listen, you know, to what Peter's about to tell us.
We use them in data centers. We have what we call hot and cold aisle containment, so we utilize some of this technology in there. Yeah.
Well, Peter, can you talk a little bit about air curtains?
Sure. All right. Well, the reason why most people aren't aware of them is because they're invisible.
Right.
So when you go into a grocery store and you see the produce section and they have refrigerated produce there, but there's no doors, it's just wide open. There is an invisible curtain of air that starts at the vent at the top of that unit and goes down to the bottom of that unit where you're about to reach in and grab some cucumbers or some apples or something. But a lot of the times that bottom vent, the product is actually covering it. So it can't suck that. What happens is it tries to suck that cold air back in instead of having it spill out onto the floor. But a lot of the times the product is blocking it, or there's a sale tag that's blocking it. So that's like sticking your hand in a waterfall. Like when you stick your hand in a waterfall, you can tell that there's, you know, you're blocking it.
That's such a good image.
That product is the cold air in that unit is now spilling out onto the floor. And so, you know, the number one complaint at grocery stores is how darn cold it is in that grocery store. Because a lot of these open refrigeration cases are not operating as efficiently as possible because they're actually spilling the cold air out onto
the floor
of the store.
You would think the store manager knows this and would, you know, would be like the one thing he can do to make a difference on the bottom line. And I was at our favorite, I won't say it's our favorite, I'll just say it's, you know.
A common
but commonly up and coming. Up and coming, or they're already they're already up there and they're have arrived. Chain of grocery stores, and they, you know, I kind of mentioned it to the produce manager. You know, you really, you know, you've got that air curtain thing going on, and he looked at me like, I don't care. And I was
well. That's a question ashamed. Then I have for Peter. Is it that? How do you feel about the training of management? I mean, is that a component? Because it seems as if what Andrea is saying and a little bit of what you're saying is it is an awareness or a lack of awareness of the benefits and the technology that they have. And maybe they're unaware because no one's explained it to them.
Well, that's it. That's exactly it. So, and that's how you engage people is you explain to them the aspects of their job and why it's important in their job. But many, and as I mentioned, I've been to several hundred grocery stores over the past couple of years, and nobody knows this, but it's essentially 27 cents per foot per day. So if you go to a grocery store and you see a 1 foot section of air curtain being blocked, and you can tell because the squares that you're standing on, the floor tiles, they're all 12 by 12. So my kids love to go around the grocery store and they can count up how many square tiles for every bit of area that's being blocked by product. And they come running back and they say, Dad, there's 23 feet of blocked space in the store today. And so we work it out, you know, at 27 cents per foot per day. If you have about 20 feet, it comes out to about $2,000 a year. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, $2,000 a year, if you apply that $18 coefficient, comes out to $36,000. Similar to the walk-in freezer example we just gave, like a $3 to $5 cost by having a leaving the door open or a leaky door or the air curtain, you know, for $30,000. And if you, as you remember in the beginning of the show here, I said that the average grocery store only makes about $300,000 in profit per year with that 1.7% profit margin. So they're looking at stuff like this going, yeah, I don't care. We don't care about the air curtain, you know, or we're not going to fix that gasket right away. It's not that big a deal. $3 to $5 a day, who cares? Well, $36,000 a year, that's more than 10% of the store's profit.
Right. You know,
just on a simple operational task.
Right. And this is
how do you throw away 10% of your yearly profits just on really no cost? That doesn't cost. You don't have to install anything and buy equipment. It's just have the staff push the product back or go buy a $4 piece of a rubber gasket and fix the door.
Yeah.
Or at least tell the refrigeration tech. So anyhow, that's how the, you know, especially when you're looking at that, that's per store, but $2,000 cost. If you're a chain with 200 stores, you're looking at it's almost $500,000.
Like
easy, no cost fixes.
I love the way you've quantified. See, this is the best part of really delving into a program that helps a business with sustainability is that they measure things and then they become real. Because if you don't,
yeah, and that's how you engage the employees. You give them the context. This is why this is important. This is why it's important to this business or this grocery store. This is why this is on your, you know, job of list of things to do is because this can help us save money. And as a customer of grocery stores, which we all are, and you know, when you're ringing up your groceries at the end of the shopping experience there, and they're you know pushing them through the scanner, and you realize that you're spending $142, you're thinking, boy, I'd like them to be a little bit more efficient with the energy use here. If I'm spending $142, I don't know am I subsidizing inefficient use of electricity here? Or, you know,
and again,
would my groceries be if this place was as tight as possible? What would the bill be?
Right. Well, that was the point I was going to make, which is, and the way this works back into our listening audience is we're paying an uplift for this waste. And if we can get the grocery stores to be more efficient, perhaps some of those ever-rising food costs will come under a little bit more control.
You know, the grocery industry and in general is not the most progressive industry out there. I think, Peter, you pointed that out at the beginning where you said, you know, walk into a grocery store and you don't know whether it's 1976 or, 2006 or whatever, 2016. That's a hurdle that they have to get over. And some of these stores are actually owned by the second generation. And I've heard one store owner say, well, you know, this was my father's store and he didn't do it that way. And
again, it comes down to training and knowledge at some level.
But
raising the professional standards of the management team.
Yeah. And And I know they feel like they might be taking a risk if they change something in the story. I mean, it's
true.
But it really works against them. So it's important, you know, in overall, I think the program that Peter promotes and rolls out gives stores, does it give the store the opportunity to advertise, if you will, to the community or to their clientele that they're, you know, that they're engaged at this level with their operations?
Yeah, that's part of it, is, you know, demonstrating and then communicating the importance of sustainability. So the certification program is a workbook-based program, and every store that is in the program right now, and we're just approaching 900 stores across the country from over a dozen different chains, almost 15 chains. They all use the workbook as the tool, as an employee engagement tool, because they need their employees to help record the data of what's going on at their store. And it's a points-based system, and if they score 150 points in the workbook, then the store qualifies for that certification. And if they get if they become certified, then we give them the logo, we do a press release, they can reach out to their community, they can reach out to the industry, they can communicate that they are engaged in this program, and that is what we want them to do. We want them to tell their employees, and we want them to tell their customers that they are, engaged in this program, and they are trying to demonstrate the importance of sustainability at what is probably the most important business sector that we go to. I mean, this is where we get 99% of all our consumable goods that we use on a daily basis, is at the grocery store.
Peter, let me ask you, I'm sure that different stores are either more or less mature in different aspects of their business. Some are probably okay in terms of their operating activities. Some probably could use help with their, you know, how they receive goods, how they store goods, how they inventory, et cetera. How do you decide where to begin, focusing? How do you find the biggest payback? Because, you know, I'm sure it's all over the map in terms of, you know, where their strengths and weaknesses are.
Yes, it is. I mean, even within a single chain of several hundred stores, they run the spectrum themselves in terms of what they're doing well and what they have, where they have opportunities. So, I can go into any grocery store in America and I can find $15,000 of energy savings within 15 minutes, like a Geico commercial.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my 12-year-old, my 10-year-old can do it too, because it's obvious things and pretty easy. And once you understand the context and you can find it, you can basically go into any grocery store in America and see some of these really easy, no-cost operational stuff with energy. When it comes to the waste, that's not so easy to see as a customer, because a lot of that happens in the back room, and a lot of it has to do with cardboard and plastic and the amount of food that's being wasted. But those are also the focus that we look at when we get there, essentially is mostly on the energy and the waste. They also, for the most part, have an opportunity with regard to chemicals and what's being used at the store, as well as what's being sold and what's on the shelves at the store and how that's being communicated. And then water is also another one that we look at. So, I mean, it's, you know, those are the four basic elements that you would go to any business with. It would be energy, waste, chemicals, and water, and try to figure out how, in some businesses, you know, the chemicals might be the number one thing instead of the energy. But with grocery stores, you know, we look at all four of those things within this workbook. The energy things are really easy to see, because and the products on the shelves, of course, that's why the customers are there. So those are probably the two easiest ones that we go after first.
Mm-hmm. So this is a little bit off point, but perhaps you're the guy to give me some insight. My family is very focused on avoiding products in plastic. We try to buy things in glass, and we're finding it difficult to buy product in glass. I guess it's more expensive for the packagers. You can find it if you go to some of the more specialty stores or the stores that maybe have more of a focus on organics and sustainability. But in general, there seems to be this move away to go to plastic, which is, you really don't want to be drinking water that's been sitting in plastic for, you know, a couple of months. I mean, you know, it'll leach in there, and it's just not good for you. Is there any back pressure from the grocers to the manufacturers in trying to change either the chemicals that they're using to preserve some of the food or some of the way that they're doing packaging? Is that another part of this sustainability movement?
Well, that is. In terms of when the grocery store has their own brand, for instance, they can try to go after some of those aspects of the products. I don't really ever see it on the packaging side, but there are grocery chains that are really making a lot of movement towards more sustainable seafood and fish products, and that's coming from the grocery store.
And I do see more and more grocery stores having dedicated areas for organically grown products, for example. And they're better at labeling, you know, meats that are free range and don't have chemical additives. So, I mean, that is something I have seen over the years as a bit of an improvement.
Well, yeah, more and more people are interested in buying something organic now than even 5 years ago. And so customers are becoming more aware of the products and what's in them, where they're being made, where they're coming from, how they're getting here, more so, especially more than 10 and 20 years ago. But even just in the last 5 years, there's more of an awareness. In fact, 77% of people are interested in the environmental attributes of the products that they shop for. It doesn't mean they're going to buy something that's green, but the market research has shown that it's over 3/4 of the people are interested or could be influenced by the environmental sort of footprint of the product that they're looking at. But a lot of times that's not communicated at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times at the grocery store, you'll have like a really great choice surrounded by 99 bad choices.
And so cheaper choices
unless you're
also.
Up to like every single issue and you know about how things are produced and where they're coming from and how they're grown or where they're made or what kind of chemicals are in them. I mean, it's like, you know, there's tens of thousands of products at a grocery store. That's a lot to be aware of. But the grocery store has a role they could play. That, you know, could help inform the customers what they're looking for and what they're buying. And some grocery stores do that.
Well, you know, in a competitive industry where stores are vying for customer loyalty, it behooves them to kind of be the front runner with respect to embracing, quote-unquote, sustainability, but then advertising that and helping their brand with that. And you know, some stores do it really well.
Well, I agree. And
Some stores don't.
Yeah, and it's not the larger chains, but I mean, it is the smaller neighborhood stores that I see a similar movement to what we've observed in restaurants in this area, which is advertising. It's grown locally. It's produced locally. You know, the farm-to-fork distance is minimized, and they do advertise that, you know, this maple syrup came from such and such a place, or they put up signage talking about the local farms that have raised the poultry that you're eating. I mean, that's a terrific initiative, but I think it comes back to what Peter's saying. People may approve of it, but are they willing to part with a few extra dollars to pay for it? That comes down to the issue.
I think that comes down to marketing, and that's exactly what the grocery store does. I mean, every 5 feet of a grocery store, it's a marketing project.
Right.
And if you're not going to market these products, well, then you're not going to get that kind of interest in them. But the interest is growing, and if you market them correctly, they will go into the basket and they will be sold. So, for instance, like outside of a grocery store, we were painting one of my kids' bedrooms, and I went into the paint shop and I asked for the low VOC paint. And the guy looked at me like, "What are you talking about? I have no idea what that is." And I said, "Well, the volatile organic compounds, like what is the content of the gallon? Is it less than 50 grams per liter or is it zero?"
Mm-hmm.
And they had no clue. Less than 6 months later, we were repainting another room in the house. I went in and I said, "Where's your low VOC paint?" "Right over there." They had the whole, it was like a huge pyramid and a huge marketing effort. And more people were interested in painting their houses without having to inhale the VOCs that continually off-gas once you paint the room, because now it's being marketed.
So I love that smell.
You know, all this stuff is a marketing opportunity.
I know what you mean. No, I'm kidding, but sometimes...
I don't get why the grocery stores hide the product that might be considered environmentally preferable,
right,
like
sure.
cleaning chemicals,
well,
in with all the traditional cleaning chemicals. There's no marketing benefit in hiding them there. Why not highlight them?
Right, and that's why I think that the grocery industry can be a little, not backwards, but a little arcane. I mean, they aren't really leading. One chain kind of leads the charge with a very, marketing directed to the consumer and talks about local and organic and fresh and sustainable this but the independent grocers don't really, maybe it's because they don't have the budget to do all that because they're not energy efficient, because we know that's $18 of sales they have to generate to cover the dollar. But
it comes down to what I think Peter said several times here, which is it's really an issue of awareness on the part of the management. If they're not aware, if they don't understand the benefit, and that's why some of the arguments we've heard here, which I think are pretty impressive.
Very.
It's hard to argue when you can demonstrate a hard dollar saving. Productivity is something that's a little bit ephemeral.
Yeah.
But when you can show, I can save you this much energy, and your $25,000 a month bill is going to drop to $18,000 a month.
Yeah.
That's tangible. That gets people's attention.
So as a result of the program that Peter's developed and administers, I won't mention the name of the store, but there was one grocery store north of Concord that embraced the whole exercise of thinking sustainably and decided to go ahead with an energy efficiency project that is basically saving them about $16,000 a year. And it's a small store.
Times 18,
which is $288,000 of revenue that they don't have to generate to cover that electricity bill. But so the smart stores, the smart store owners, the smart businessmen are real, are embracing it. And as us baby boomers kind of age out, and many of us are aware that we care, we expect businesses to do a good job on the environmental front, and pass the savings on to us, maybe not, but the millennials are much more in tune with all that.
And that's a good question. So Peter, you've got a listening audience here. What should people do? I mean, you were very clear with your example that you went in and you asked about the VOC paint. And and probably others did as well, and that eventually led to some kind of a change. Is that the best thing for us to do? Should we be, when we're in a store, find the store manager and say, hey, we're just wondering, have you participated in this program, or are you aware of it? Or what? I guess I'm asking, what can we do to help push this program along?
Yes, well, that's a great question. And so often we go there to the store and buy our groceries and swipe our card and leave, and we never say anything.
Right.
Yet while we're walking through the grocery store, we're always thinking, I wonder where this is made. I wonder if this is organic. I wonder what's in this. But we do. We typically say nothing when we leave. So I think as customers, definitely, if you're going to be there, especially twice a week, pick one of those times and engage the store manager. And be like, hey, I noticed that you're doing some really interesting energy initiative stuff here. Or, hey, I've noticed that, the butcher area is closed, but all the appliances are still on. Why are they left on all night? And is it every store in the chain doing this? Or mention, like Andrea said, like go up and say, hey, what's up with the air curtains? Why don't you push all that stuff back so the machine can operate more efficiently? So, you don't have to make like a half an hour speech to the store manager, but as you're like walking out, you can say something. So we have cards available. So if people get in touch with me at gsd@manomet.org, I can outfit you with a business card size thing that you can just stick in your wallet. And the next time you're at the grocery store, you can pull it out and look for these five things that are listed on the card. And it has to do with air curtains, has to do with iced seafood displays, it has to do with food waste. And, four of the things you could look for, one of the things you have to ask the grocery store manager about, but it allows you an opportunity to engage them. Because unless we do engage them, it's going to be a challenge. It's like grocery stores are going to continue to look like it's 1960 unless we engage them more.
Yeah, and I think that's really a really excellent point. Just a little bit of a side story. The grocery stores here in Bedford have been very generous in supporting different charitable events. And so when we have Old Town Day and things like this, some of the stores make some contributions to the nonprofits to make that event successful. And I always take the opportunity to go into those stores, you know, after the event, like after Old Town Day or a Strawberry Festival or something like this. And I say, hey, is the manager here? And of course, the person comes over and they're expecting a complaint. And I just say, hey, I just want to say thank you for supporting the community and making that contribution. I saw your store's name, and one of the reasons I shop here is because you support the economy. Boy, what a different reaction I get, because, again, they're coming over here expecting that they're going to get pounded by somebody. They're not going to get complimented. They're not going to hear a positive message. And it sounds like the same, you know, if you set the tone with your 5 points on the card, it could make all the difference. And again, as you said, so few people do this. You're very leveraged. You represent 100 people probably in speaking to them, that you know, 99 pass and don't say a word.
Good point.
That's right. And recognition is important. If you see a behavior that you like or some sort of action that you like and it goes not recognized, the social science behind it shows that the person that has engaged in that behavior may revert back without the recognition.
Right.
That's all they want. That's the number one thing that people want, actually. Number one is recognition. Number two, three, and four is status, power, and then free stuff. Many people think you incentivize people by giving them free stuff and money, but that's really like, that's fourth.
Yeah.
Wow. All they want is to be recognized.
That's
number one, and that's cheap.
That's so good. Such an interesting lesson to right there. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
We should take that forward into everything we do.
So what's next for Manomet? What are your plans as you look at, you know, 2019, 2020? What does the next decade hold for you? Do you have any specific goals that the organization has set for the proliferation of this program? Are there other ones in line? Are you looking to expand it? Sort of give us an insight into your strategic plan.
Well, we're always looking to expand. We're at 900. We're almost at 900 stores right now, but there are 37,000 more grocery stores in America. So we would like to start whittling away at a faster pace. Otherwise, this could take 180 years to get to all these stores. So there's that, and there's also the other things that Manomet does, you know, we do a lot of wildlife conservation and bird work, which is all information on the website. And we do have a big Future of Fish forum going on down in Boston next week in terms of sustainable harvesting of seafood. So that's a big event that's coming up. And we're also engaging college students to be more effective sustainability professionals after they get out of college. And so we work with a lot of different colleges, and we find opportunities for college students to get out of the classroom and do a service learning sort of project, something that really contributes to actual businesses in real life rather than it just being like a homework assignment and theoretical. So we're doing some service learning projects with colleges too.
Do you have an office here in New Hampshire, or is your office primarily in Maine and in Massachusetts in this area?
The headquarters is in Massachusetts. We have an office in Brunswick, Maine, which is mostly the business sustainability programs and the fishery programs.
Mm-hmm. So the best way to reach you really is online through the web.
Yeah, manomet.org, M-A-N-O-M-E-T. And the grocery program is GSC, Grocery Stewardship Certification, so GSC at manomet.org.
All right. And if I were a store owner or something, we could just go on the website, get a telephone number or an email, and shoot it over to you and get some advice on how to move forward.
Yeah, you could. Or if you're a grocery store owner and you're a member of the New Hampshire Grocers Association, if you got in touch with the executive director there, John Dumas, he knows how to get in touch with us. We've done a lot of great collaborative work with the New Hampshire Grocers Association.
That's terrific. Well, you know, you guys are doing a terrific job here. And Andrea, your organization has a link to these people as well. I know that you've been somewhat involved in energy efficiency and things like this, with, and of course, your sustainability background.
Yeah. I completely endorse Peter's program with grocery stores, and occasionally I will, you know, lend him a hand and visit a store or two in New Hampshire. And likewise, if anybody wants to participate in this program that Peter's just talked about, they could contact me as well.
That's terrific. Yeah. Well, very, very good. Listen, Peter, thank you very much. This has been very interesting, and you guys are making a real difference. It has to be somewhat rewarding to come home to your family and say, hey, you know, we're helping things. We're making a difference. And as you said, I think people generally have a feeling they feel good when they do these things. So that's a terrific
job. Well, you're welcome, and thank you for having me on the program.
Yeah, that's terrific. Why don't you give us Manumit one more time so that everybody can spell it and know exactly how to reach you?
Okay, it's M like Mary, A, N like Nancy, O, M like Mary, E, T like Tom, manumit.org.
Very, very good. And again,
then, the grocery program, grocerycert.org. If you just type in grocerycert.org, it'll take you to the grocery-specific
Great.
And program information.
And some of the statistics that you put out in the discussion tonight and things like this, are there some either white papers or some research that people can easily find that if they want to find the citations behind, you know, some of the comments to learn a little bit more? Is that on your website, or is it best for them just to go through the search engines?
Well, no, it's just best to have them contact us, because we have set up a calculator database where we do a lot of these calculations and quantifications, and it's not readily available on the website, but you're going to have to engage either me or the field manager of this program. And if anybody really wants to find out what the numbers are and where these numbers are coming from in terms of which sources we're using, which, by the way, are either governmental energy sites or peer-reviewed papers or a variety of different things, we can give you the whole calculations and where the calculations come from, because that's important. But yeah, I recommend getting in touch with us personally and engage.
Sure.
That's great.
And will you be speaking at any events nearby or in the area that if people wanted to hear more and learn about this? Andrea alluded to the fact you have a great presentation. Will you be Is there a public forum or anything coming up over the balance of the summer? We're speaking to you right now in mid-July of 2018, or in the fall. Are there events we should be looking at?
Yes. Well, let's see. As a matter of fact, I am speaking in August in Portland, Maine, and there is an event there on water conservation on August 29th, and but we also do webinars and web-based presentations, and so I don't have anything on the calendar yet. But
we could find out by going to your website, though, I'm sure. Is there some kind of a newsletter or something people can subscribe to learn to stay in touch?
Yes, there is. You can subscribe to a newsletter at manumit.org, and there's both a Manumit newsletter and there's also a grocery stewardship certification newsletter.
Great. Well, again, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Peter.
So we're at sort of at the end of the show, and we've had a show which has discussed a lot of financial things, really making tangible, you know, good business sense turned into dollars and cents.
Well, it's where community and business intersect.
And I know that this is one of your areas of expertise, Andrea.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, as you reflect back on the show and you reflect on all that you know and the advice you give all of your clients, do you have some advice to leave us with for this week as you do each and every week?
Let me think. Yes, I do.
Well, let's hear it.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And remember, you can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.